Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
The Quilt of Bananas program plays every Sunday, 10 to 11am, with news, views and music.
A collective of presenters, advertisers, community events and discusses news of interest to lesbians, queer women and non-binary folk.
We have interviews about past and future sports and cultural events, politics, films, art shows.
The program is sponsored through the generosity of the Rural Foundation.
And it plays every Sunday from 10 to 11am on Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM.
Good morning, good morning. Sorry, I've had that song in my head all weekend. I was singing it all of yesterday, driving everyone bonkers. It's my new alarm clock thing. So to try and start me on a positive beginning to the day. So good morning and welcome to Quilted Bananas on Sunday, the 1st of March, beginning of the month. Hooray for us. Quilted Bananas is on every Sunday between 10 and 11am and we're sponsored by the Rural Foundation on Access Radio 106.1 FM, Te Whanganui a Tara. We are a radio show for queer, intersex, lesbian, trans, takitapui, NB, diverse, bisexual, asexual, and nanas, both literal and metaphorical. Some of us are actual nanas. Some of us are just metaphorically nanas, figurative nanas, not metaphorical. Who am I? I kind of briefly introduced myself last week, but I wasn't really sure. Obviously not last week, a couple of weeks ago. I'm Sarah, and my background is in all sorts of stuff. But as I've come to realize, my main fascination is basically people and history and things and how everything interacts and interconnects. So what I've realized that I do is when I'm thinking about what I might want to do when I'm given the opportunity and foolishly given a microphone by some deranged fool who's gone, yeah, you'll be fine at that, is that I have a habit of then going and kind of thinking, okay, so what day am I doing this? And maybe just go and see if something really interesting happened on that day or something interesting is happening on that day. So today we're going to start with a tune from an organization, a group called Transa. And Transa are part of the Red Hot organization. And Red Hot was established in 1989 to produce a charity album for Cole Porter songs to raise money for AIDS research and AIDS awareness, a non-for-profit organization. And they released an album in 1990 called Red Hot and Blue. And since then, they've actually released 26 albums. And they're astonishing because they cover everything from jazz to Latin American to just anything and everything you can think of. This latest project of theirs is basically supporting and organized by the trans community. They first released song music from this in 2024, just after the elections and the second election of Donald Trump in the States. And the first release from it was actually a song by Sade called Young Lion, which was dedicated to her transgender son, Isaac. So this particular one that I've chosen has a very special place in my heart because when I was younger, I was a massive Prince fan. Massive. So, and I was famous when I was at university for the fact that you knew when I was awake because you would hear the opening bars of Purple Rain come out of my room. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. See, I can still recite it. And this particular track is a cover version of I Would Die For You by Prince and the Revolution. And it's got an even more special place in my heart because two of the musicians who worked on it and helped produce it are the legendary, my most favouritest ever, Wendy and Lisa from The Revolution. So this is I Would Die For You with Lauren Ander and Wendy Melvin and Lisa Coleman.
Thank you. Spider-Man. I'm something that you'll never understand. I'll never be true, I'll never lie. And if you're evil, I'll forgive you by and by. Cause you, I would die for.
We are having a network issue in the studio.
Darling, if you want me to, I would die for you. And I'm not your lover, I'm not your friend. I'm something that you'll never comprehend. No need to worry, no need to cry. I'm your messiah and you're the reason why.
Yeah, we've got some network issues in the building today. This is really rare for us to have network issues here with the Wi-Fi.
Darling, so if you want me to,
you're back, I think.
I will die for you. Cause you, I will die for you.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think we might have to leave Wendy and Lisa till a little later. This is Fiona here, the tech.
Darling, if you want me to, I will die for you.
Yeah, hello. We're obviously having some technical issues here, but Fiona is onto it. So what she's going to do is she's going to try and hotspot from her phone. And meanwhile, I will fill in with interesting facts. I was just saying to Fiona that I, Wendy and Lisa, as people that know me, particularly people that knew me in my 20s, are one of my absolute favourite musician combinations. And when I was younger, and into Prince and the Revolution, I kind of had this, you know, sometimes you get that vibe of people, a bit of a, what's going on there? And then I found out in the 90s that they actually were a queer couple. And they'd been a couple. And this is why and how Wendy joined the Revolution, because she was visiting Lisa while she was on tour, Purple Rain. And as Lisa's girlfriend, and Prince heard her playing the guitar, and the rest was history. So if you're very lucky one day, lucky in, you know, perhaps depending on what you consider luck to be, good or bad, you might get to enjoy an hour of me giving my in-depth discussion on the history of Wendy and Lisa and their influence on modern music. I probably should, you know. They are. You'll be surprised and amazed. So that's one of the reasons why that they are involved with this project, because they are very, very supportive of the transgender community, and very supportive of the queer community in general. Obviously have been kind of, you know, amongst the most famous of the queer musicians in the community during the 80s and 90s onwards, and have worked with everybody from, you know, K.D. Lang, Joni Mitchell, crowded Neil Finn. They've done albums with Neil Finn. They've been spent time in New Zealand. They've won awards for Emmys music. I think they were the first women to win an award for the main theme title music. An Emmy for that. All sorts of astonishing things. Anyway, I'll save that for another time if you want to hear about it. I might, even if you don't want to hear about it, I might save it for another time.
Let's continue with the show.
The hotspot is happening.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. We're going to continue with the show. The hotspot is not happening. Yeah, so we're just going to...
We're restarting.
We'll move along. So today, March the 1st. March the 1st, 2026... 40 years since homosexual law reform in New Zealand. Hurrah! 40 years of pride in Wellington. And we're going to start this with looking at today is, in fact, the United Nations Zero Discrimination Day, which, again, another one of those great things where you kind of go, oh, never heard of that. What's that all about? So the 1st of March is UN Zero Discrimination Day, which is one of the reasons I wanted to play the Transer version of I Would Die For You, because I Would Die For You has often been told about, it's said that Prince wrote it about kind of religion and Christ, but it's also very much about being more than just, you know, male, female, this, that and the other. It's all about how you can, you know, you are more than just your physical being. And UN Zero Discrimination Day for 2026 is entitled People First. Zero Discrimination Day began in 2014 as an event that was put together by UNAIDS. So it's United Nations, UNAIDS, literally, which is the United Nations organization whose aim is to end AIDS as a public health threat by 2030, which is a pretty good blooming target. It's not that far off. They're not entirely convinced at the moment they're going to achieve it, but they're certainly working on it. And one of their biggest priorities is healthcare as human right. Healthcare shouldn't just be something that's based on where you live, who you are, how much money you've got, any of these things. It should be about the fact that it's merely being human is what makes the difference. And they started this project, this Zero Discrimination Day event in 2014. And they launched it in Beijing on 27th of December 2014, and they held the first ever Zero Discrimination Day on the 1st of March 2014. And the principal aim of it is to combat discrimination against people living with HIV and AIDS. And this is something which is really interesting because it was such a massive thing when I was growing up and in the 80s. And then it kind of faded away a bit and it comes in and out of the news. But certainly, I think a lot of people who don't have a specific reason to think about it have kind of forgotten about it and just pushed it into the background. So what's happening now is that these organizations are really trying to help, let's say, combat discrimination. And this is really interesting because, say, I go off on these little tangents. I look stuff up and they go, oh, so what's this? What's that? The internet has enhanced my life. I was going to say destroy my life, but it's not, because I can click on buttons, and otherwise I'd be that person in a library for hours and days going, did you know? So around HIV and AIDS, obviously the big thing about it for a lot of us was in the 80s when it became this massive, massive kind of epidemic in the States. And it was an epidemic that was pretty much the press and whoever it was decided that they would make it into a gay disease. They would use it as a way of effectively gay bashing. Moralism. I remember this was the famous, I was thinking about this the other day because of the, this is how my brain works, because of the ice skating, the figure skating, the girl who won the figure skating gold medal did the figure skating gold medal to Donna Summer. Donna Summer, obviously massive gay icon at the time, fell out of favor with the gay community because she famously said that AIDS was God's punishment. So this is, again, how my brain works. Dum ba da bum bum, and bounces around all over the place. So it became this, the idea that it was this gay disease. In fact, I think originally it was called, it had this weird name, like GRIP or something, gay-related immune pandemic, the Americans gave it. Although we now know that it's actually been around since at least the 1950s. And that it basically came into the States. And obviously, these things get attention when they start affecting white men. It came into the States mostly via intravenous drug use and contaminated blood samples. And people that had been given contaminated blood samples overseas and then traveled to live in the States and so on and so forth. The problem is it takes a long time to incubate. So it doesn't necessarily show up straight away. And then they started noticing it in gay male communities. And the reason they noticed this was just kind of one of those, you know, perfect storm situations. So it became in the early 80s quite the focus point for the queer community to research and to find out ways to be safe and to actually kind of, this is one of the things that forced people to not come out, but to go, you know what? I deserve better. And by 1987, this epidemic had killed nearly 60,000 people. And this is when we got organizations like ACT UP. So ACT UP was the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, which were fighting for healthcare rights. They were fighting for the right for people to actually be treated humanely. So all of this was kicking off in the 80s. Okay, an example of my nerdery, when I watched Wonder Woman, was it Wonder Woman 1980, whatever it was, and they had a thing in one of the scenes where it was, this is the second Wonder Woman film, where they had an ACT UP sign, and I sat there and went, oh, ACT UP didn't exist till the year after that. Apart from that, it was entirely realistic, you know, factually correct. So this kind of comes into all of this thing. The thing that really, again, this is going to become one of my catchphrases, because I think I said it last time, grinds my beans, it's a polite way of saying things, is the fact that now, thanks to treatment, I love good medicine, most of the people who are negatively impacted by HIV and AIDS are women, vulnerable communities, particularly Black community, particularly African communities. And so a lot of people in the States and in the West can live for quite a long time, if not decades and decades and decades, happily without suffering any really serious ill effects from AIDS. But there are still people dying in huge quantities, particularly Black women in Africa. So I was thinking, okay, so what's happening with them? What's going on here? And this is brilliant. I found a new superhero, Professor Penny Moore and her team. Professor Penny Moore in South Africa. She works at the University of Witwatersrand, at the National Institute for Communicable Diseases in Johannesburg. And she is a researcher who's been working for over 20 years on basically viruses. Her work is, she was one of the first people to identify Omicron variant in COVID. Because part of what she does, and this is so fascinating, is that her and her team, their work is they've realized that one of the things with HIV that makes it so tricky is that it mutates ridiculous amounts. So HIV in one region is different from HIV in a different region. So their research saying, the example they gave was HIV in, where was it? HIV in Senegal isn't the same as HIV in Kenya, which isn't the same as HIV in Botswana. So you get all these mutations, and that's why it's really hard to pin it down. But what her team have discovered through work with this amazing group of women, so there's a group of 117 South African women in a particular town, and over 20 years, they have given blood samples to this research team. And they've used, these women are HIV positive, and these blood samples have been used to study the progress of AIDS, sorry, of HIV. And what they've discovered, and this is amazing, that some of these women, after a certain amount of time, develop a particular antibody. Not many, a small fraction. And this antibody is known as a broadly neutralizing antibody. This is where it gets really cool. And the broadly neutralizing antibody have this superpower where they can basically recognize any virus, regardless of where it comes from, and they can stop up to 90% of viruses. It doesn't have to be HIV. 90% of viruses, full stop. These antibodies just go, aha, I know you, you're a virus, boof. The problem is it takes a while for these women's bodies to figure out that they need this antibody. And normally what happens is the antibody only develops when it's a bit too late. So the antibody tends, this particular antibody, the broadly neutralizing antibody, the BNA, tends to only develop in these women when the HIV is so prolific that it can't really be stopped. It can't get rid of it. So what Professor Moore and her team are trying to figure out is how to make this, your body go, I need that antibody, and go and develop it right at the beginning. So basically, what, with a bit of luck, if they keep doing their work, they might be able to develop a vaccine that can tell your body before that it needs these super antibodies, and it will just absolutely hand HIV its ass on the plate. Amazing. So again, slight hiccup in this, but it turns out to be a good hiccup. I'm kind of enjoying these hiccups. The hiccup is, of course, that a lot of their funding, a lot of their research is funded by an organization that is known as USAID. USAID, again, most of us never heard this till last year. USAID is the American organization for, the United States Agency for International Development. It's basically their way of assuaging guilt about dropping poo on most of the world. And in January 2025, Donald Trump, with one of his legendary executive orders, along with the assistance of that delightful chap Elon Musk, decided to cut huge swathes of US aid. US aid had been providing, had in 2023 given a $45 million grant to this, the research group working on this vaccination. This is a 5-year grant. That got axed. The interesting part of this, this whole little things tying in with little things. One of the fun parts of this is the fact that when it got axed, they actually found this out in the middle of a meeting. And the meeting that they were in was in Zanzibar. So they're having a conference in Zanzibar with pretty much everyone from Africa who works on this kind of subject, this topic. And I'm going to really annoy Sue by playing something off my phone, only very briefly. It's literally a clip.
Right. Let's see how it... Let us know if you can't hear it.
There you go, there's that. The reason I played that is because Zanzibar's birthplace of Freddie Mercury. There you go, tie-in. Freddie Mercury lived there till he was 17, apparently. Anyway, so they're having this conference in Zanzibar. They get the message through saying their funding's been cut. Disaster. How are they going to carry on? They just set up this massive testing thing, trials for the new vaccines to see how they would work. So you think, well, this is awful. So gone. But it's actually come to something really good, because what's happened is that they haven't got rid of the trials. They're carrying on with the trials. They've just scaled it down to a small trial that's just in South Africa, in one town in South Africa. But now it's being funded by Africans. So what's going to happen, if we're really, really lucky, is that because the Americans have decided not to give people their money, people will start doing it for themselves, and they won't need the Americans to help them. Thank you very much. But the thing that kept coming back to me was the fact that there's these 117 women who are in some of the most vulnerable positions in the world, who have basically spent 2 decades going, we want to help. This isn't necessarily going to do us any good, but it's going to, if we can change the world for the people that come after us, we will do it. So again, it's this whole idea of these women who are just, you think of HIV and AIDS as being this, you know, say the white gay men in America, and it's actually these South African women who are gonna save us all. And I love this so, so much. So that just makes me really happy. It's kind of the whole, you think it should be a really depressing subject, and it's actually really, we're doing this, whoa. So that just, yeah. Along with the Zero Discrimination Day and this bit of news, it's just made me kind of feel really positive about something that 40 years ago was just a death sentence. The other thing I looked at was, because again, you think this whole, you know, 40 years ago, death sentence, but okay, there are people that you don't think about that are just living with HIV and have been. Magic Johnson. Fiona, do you remember Magic Johnson, the basketball player?
Yeah.
So Magic Johnson famously came out in 1991 saying that he was HIV positive. Magic Johnson's still around.
Wow.
Like 35 years later, he's still fit, happy, healthy. So this whole idea that you would be, boom. And I watched so many people, and this happened to so many of my friends. And so it's so just joyous to know that people can just, it's the other thing with this vaccine, sorry before I forget, it can stop you either passing on HIV or getting HIV from someone who has it. So it just literally stops it in its tracks. So if they can get this thing going, alongside there's another vaccine that you can have biannually, which reduces the risk, we might have actually got this little swine by the short and curlies. So on that note, let's go on to a bit of pride. We are...
Do you want to play some music in the meantime?
We will play some music. I'm just going to introduce the music.
Okay.
So the music, because I've got a reason. Everything has a reason with me. You'll learn this, Fiona. The reason for this particular tune is that for the first 3 weeks of March in 1986, the number one hit single in the hit parade, as my mum would call it, the number one single in the hit parade was possibly one of the first really obvious gay band songs in, of my generation anyway, was the Pet Shop Boys, West End Girls. So we're going to have a listen to West End Girls. Pet Shop Boys, West End Girls. Oh, God, that takes me back. Takes me back. I remember being, it's really funny because I just remember seeing them on TV when I was a teenager and thinking, oh, they're so camp. And I know this was the age of Boy George and all of this stuff, but it was kind of that real, almost in some ways, Pet Shop Boys were the one of the overtly queer bands that it was okay for straight people to like. It was really peculiar, really interesting and really fun. And so it kind of became this real, almost like, oh, okay, fine, you can have them as well. It's all good. So Wellington Pride, which is this month. Hooray. So it's the 6th to the 22nd of March in Wellington. And the themes are honouring the past, building for the future and celebrating the now. So I can honour 1986 I say, I'm showing my age, but the terrible thing for all of you lot is I was 16 in 1986, just at the most obnoxious, arrogant, up myself age. And so 1986 is like the year of, there's nothing I can't tell you about 1986. It's magic. Anyway, so we've got Pride this month, Wellington Pride. 15th of March is the Pride Hikoi and out in the park. Hopefully the sun will shine and we'll have a fabulous, fabulous day. Obviously, last time I spoke a little bit about Stonewall, which is considered to be one of the origins of Pride. And, excuse me, the first UK Pride was held in 1972. And apparently the phrase gay pride was first used or encouraged in 1971. So this is when they were like, you know, the classic, say it loud, say it proud. We're here, we're queer. Yeah. So that was one of my first bizarre Wendy and Lisa queer clues. In an interview, one of them said to the other one, say it loud, say it proud. And they went, what? This moment of panic. So what's happened over the last 40 years in Pride? The first Wellington Pride Fair, apparently it was at Newtown School, presumably a Newtown School Hall. Newtown represent. I live in Newtown. My kids went to Newtown School. Yay. Go Newtown. With the cool kids. I would say that. And the fair was called A Fair for a Fair Law. So this was the Homosexual Reform Act was passed on the 9th of July 1986, signed into law on the 11th of July 1986, came into effect on the 8th of August 1986. And this reduced the age of consent between consenting adult males to 16 years old. Famously, in British law, there's never been an age of consent issue for women because, you know, we're just all Barbie dolls. We have no actual interest or whatever. Obviously, with age of consent first criminalised under colonial law in 1858. This is another good fact. So New Zealand, well done you. Congratulations. You reduced the age of consent to 16 before the British, before the English. And I remember this because I remember in the UK being with friends and actually campaigning for the reduction of the age of consent in the UK. Because in the UK, the age of consent for heterosexual sex was 16. The age of consent for gay men was, it was until 1994, it was 21. And then they reduced it to 18 in 1994. And it wasn't until 2000 that they actually reduced it to 16. So New Zealand had 14 years. We were ahead of us. Well done. Congratulations. I mean, we were obviously also going through lots of weird Thatcher stuff at the same time. We also had in the UK things like Section 28, which was repealed, which meant you weren't allowed to mention gay or anything like that in schools. I mean, it's a lot of, it reminds me so much of the nonsense that we're getting now about what you can and cannot say in schools in case someone catches being gay from hearing a story about a penguin that has two dads or something. It's absolute nonsense. And anyone who's queer knows this. You can't be talked into it because it's hard work, frankly. So basically we've had this kind of, you know, we've had 40 years of things moving forwards. And I like to often talk to people who aren't queer. This sounds really bad. I sometimes like to talk to people that aren't queer. I do talk to people that aren't queer. But what I was going to say is sometimes I find myself having conversations with people who don't consider themselves to be queer about what's actually happened in terms of gay rights in my lifetime and how it's changed. And most people just don't know because they don't. Why would they? It doesn't affect them. But things like the fact, you know, being, again, things that a lot of people go, well, I don't want to do that anyway. Like, you know, serve in the army. But you're allowed to now. Get married. Some people go, oh, I don't want to get married. But you can. We've got a whole load of legal rights. And I was saying this to Fiona whilst West End Girls was playing. It's really easy to get stressed out about the fact that you're seeing so many things being rolled back. You're seeing things being taken away. But once something's been put in place, something's been invented, it's really hard to uninvent it. So once you've made something legal and made it acceptable and people have got their heads around it, it's really hard for them to go, people, oh, we should get rid of that because it's really bad. They'll go, but it's not because I've seen it's not bad. So this is something I'm working really hard on because it's really easy to look at the news, hear this, hear that and go, ugh, they're out to get us. They are. Some of them are out to get us, but much, much more of them are with us. And we get the people that are with us, annoyed enough, it'll get fine. It'll be fine. Again, we can kind of tie this into things like the transgender absolute fiasco debacle in the UK. And they've done surveys that show that the vast majority of people are completely fine, completely okay with, you know, support for transgender youth, transgender women. None of them have a problem. It's just a political football. And so you have to kind of, I think sometimes it's really, it's frustrating. It frustrates the hell out of me. But you've got to remember that we're there and we're doing it and we're working on it. And there's more of us than there are of them. This is the thing I always look at it. Once you add us all together, there's more of us than there are of them. Because it doesn't have to just be the transgender community. It doesn't have to be the lesbian community. It doesn't have to be the gay community. It doesn't have to be the, you know, the, we all come together. Mm-hmm. And once, if you get, yeah, we're minorities. You add all the minorities up, I think we're a bit of a majority. Thank you very much for asking. So we're getting there. And the wonderful thing we have here in Aotearoa is the fact that being queer was here before the British were. I always have this conversation with people about, you know, homophobia is a colonial introduction. Construct. Also, you know, we were the ones that started coming up here going, oh, you've got to be Christians and you've got to do this, 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 and the other. You know, before that, everyone was like, well, just do what you want to do. It's all good. You're not doing anyone any harm. So it's not been around for that long. Look at this archaeologically. This is where my other, you know, comfort blanket is. When you look at the world in terms of thousands of years, most of the time, this is a blip. So people will say things like, this is my amazing, how can I get this about ancient Egypt? Ancient Egypt, people will argue here, there, everywhere, were there queer people in ancient Egypt? Of course they were. Of course they were. Do we hear about them? Not particularly. Maybe we didn't hear about them because they didn't care. My personal pet theory, I love this theory, and one day I will go into this, is they didn't care because it's really hard to produce children from a same-sex relationship. And their main interest in the ancient world was inheritance rights. So why would they care if you're, you know, you're married to someone, great, you're married to a bloke because you need inheritance rights, you need kids to look after you. But they might have had loads of these kind of, you know, marriages where the husband was gay, the wife was, or they're both queer. Who cares what they're doing in their spare time as long as they've got kids to keep them going? Anyway, that's a whole. That's me going off into fantasy land. But we never know. We never know. So Wellington Pride this month hasn't quite started yet, but it will be kicking off over the next week or so. I think today is the day for, I think you need to, there's something on the Pride website, was about expressions of interest, I think, was the needs to be in today, I think. But go and check out the website. There's tons of information out there. Obviously, you know, Joanna was on the other week. She's pretty accessible and available. So, yeah. So West End Girls, 3 weeks of that we had in the 1986. I love the fact that it was number one for 3 weeks. I kind of miss those days. I'm so old.
Sunday what was night. It 3 weeks of? Just to remind people.
3 weeks of?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean?
Oh, you said it was 3 weeks of.
Oh, 3 weeks of the Pet Shop Boys, yes, being number one with West End Girls, their first mm-hmm. single, mm-hmm. which is, I say, to my mind, one of the most obviously camp. Neil Tennant cannot hide the camp in his voice. It's just impossible. So, yeah, it was 3 weeks of on West End Girls being number one, just as New Zealand and Wellington were getting going with Pride. We love that. So, now, I did say in my little bit of blurb about my stuff and nonsense, I think stuff and nonsense is the best way to describe my brain, was that we were going to veer into witchcraft. Ooh. On that note, I would start now with, I was trying to find a song, a positive song about witchcraft. And because I'm me, I didn't want to go into Wicked because, boring, cliche. We've all had enough of that. Find something different. It's quite hard, turns out. But again, show tunes. Gotta love a show tune. Show tune. Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods. Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods, a musical about fundamentally lots of fairy tale characters getting on the wrong side of a witch. And this is Bernadette Peters singing, but it's the full cast singing Your Fault, with also Bernadette Peters singing Last Midnight from the original cast recording.
Oops. Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Go for it.
amidst, and my wife is dead. But it isn't my fault I was given those beans. You persuaded me to trade away my cow for beans, and without those beans, there'd have been no stock to get up to the giants in the first place.
Wait a minute, magic beans for a cow so old that you had to tell a lie to sell it, which you told. Were they worthless beans? Were they oversold? Oh, and tell us who persuaded you to steal that gold.
See, it's your fault.
No.
So it's your fault.
No.
Yes, it is.
It's not.
It's true.
Wait a minute, but I only stole the gold to get my cow back from you.
So it's your fault.
Yes.
No, it isn't. I'd have kept those beans, but our house was cursed. She made us get a cow to get the curse reversed.
It's your father's fault that the curse got placed and the place got cursed in the first place. Oh, then it's his fault.
It was his fault.
No.
Yes, it is. It's his.
I guess.
Wait a minute, though. I chopped down the beanstalk, right? That's clear. But without any beanstalk, then what's queer is how did the second giant get down here in the first place? Second place.
Yeah, how?
Well, who had the other bean?
The other bean.
The other bean.
You pocketed the other bean.
I didn't. Yes, I did.
So it's yours.
No, it isn't, because I gave it to my wife.
So it's hers.
No, it isn't.
Then who's it?
Wait a minute. She exchanged that bean to obtain your shoe, so the one who knows what happened to the bean is you.
You mean that old bean that your wife... Oh, dear, but I never knew, and so I do. But don't look here.
So it's your fault.
But see, it's her fault.
But you
and it isn't mine at all.
But what?
Well, if you hadn't gone back up again...
We were needy.
You were greedy. Did you need that head?
But I got it from my mother.
So it's her fault, then.
Yes, but what about the harp in the third place?
The harp, yes. Wait, you dared me to.
I dared you to?
You dared me to. She said that I was scared to. She dared me.
No, I
so
didn't.
So it's your fault.
Wait a minute.
You hadn't dared him to.
And you had left the harp alone. You wouldn't
hadn't
be in trouble
away
in the first
place.
Yes,
she hadn't raised the beans in the first place.
It's
your
fault. You're
responsible. You're the one to blame. It's your fault. It's the last midnight. It's the last wish. It's the last midnight. Soon it will be boom, squish. A lie, stole a little gold, broke a little vow. Did you? Had to get your prince, had to get your cow, have to get your wish, doesn't matter how, anyway, it doesn't matter now. It's the last midnight, it's the boom splat, nothing but a last midnight, everybody smash. Flat. Nothing we can do, not exactly true. We can always give her the boy. No, no, of course what really matters is the blame. Somebody to blame. Fine, if that's the thing you enjoy, placing the blame. If that's the aim, give me the blame. Just give me the boy.
No.
No. You're so nice. You're not good, you're not bad, you're just nice. I'm not good, I'm not nice, I'm just right. I'm the witch, you're the world. I'm the hitch, I'm what no one believes. I'm the witch. You're all liars and thieves, like his father, like his son will be too. Oh, why bother? You'll just do what you do. It's the last midnight, so goodbye, all. Coming at you fast, midnight. Soon you'll see the sky fall. Here you want a bean, have another bean. Beans were made for making you rich. Plant them and they soar. Here you want some more. Listen to the roar, giants by the score. Well, you can blame another witch. It's the last midnight. It's the last verse. Now before it's past midnight, I'm leaving you my last curse. I'm leaving you alone. You can tend the garden, it's yours, separate and alone. Everybody down on all fours. All right, mother, when? Lost the beans again. Punish me the way you did then. Give me claws and a hunt. Just away from this bunch. And the gloom, and the doom, and the boom.
Crikey, that's a dramatic ending, wasn't it? So that was... from Into the Woods, and that was the original cast recording with Bernadette Peters as the witch. She's, I don't know how much you know about Into the Woods, but it's pretty fun. There was a film made of it, which I'm, is, you know, it's all right, but you know, I think they got Meryl Streep playing the witch in that. And what it is fundamentally is it's Stephen Sondheim taking the story of Rapunzel and how the witch in Rapunzel is treated like this dreadful, dreadful woman. But what it is that basically it all happens because people keep asking her for things or taking things from her. And then they blame her for the stuff that happens afterwards. It's like, well, if you hadn't asked me for the magic beans or the whatever it was, then... So it's a lot of it is, you know, be careful what you wish for. But it's cracking fun. The reason of witchcraft. So March the 1st is Zero Discrimination Day. March the 1st, 2026, is also the 334th anniversary of the first Salem witch trial.
Oh, my God.
I know.
I'm so happy to hear that. Well, I guess it's such a great thing to kind of be reminded of, you know.
Oh, and this is so much. It's not fun for the people involved in it, but it's such a. There was a TV series made a few years ago called Salem. Bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. American TV series. Lucy Lawless turns up in it after a couple of series. It's just, I would recommend you watch it just because it is so nuts. And I really enjoyed it because it just goes really out there. Okay, so between March 1692 and May 1693, we have the legendary Salem witch trials. We've all heard of them. They've been in Stephen King, everyone else. What actually happened, though? Because a lot of us don't really know. What happened was, there's a lot of background. I won't get into the background. We could be here for days. But basically, three women were accused of witchcraft and put on trial. The reason they were accused was because three young girls, one was 9, one was 11, one was 12, all started to have the kind of these bizarre symptoms, fits, convulsions, all of these kind of things. And they couldn't figure out what was going on. And this was, say, in the settlement of Salem, which had been established, I think, in 1626. There you go. Named Salem in 1629. And the local doctor, being a medical genius he was, decided that it was supernatural causes. These girls, after some discussion, one of whom was the daughter of the church minister, and one of them was the niece of the main church minister, eventually said it was due to a woman called Tituba. Tituba had basically cursed them. Tituba, and this is where it becomes real cliche, Tituba is an enslaved woman who works in the household. There's some debate about whether she was Caribbean, whether she was Native American. We don't really know because we only know about her from the trial documents. So Tituba, who is basically working in this household, is accused of basically cursing these children. And this results in Tituba being taken for questioning. And after several days of being questioned, aka beaten, from January 1692 through to end of February 1692, she confesses. And what she confesses is that she did undertake witchcraft, but she did it at the behest of other people. So some of this thing is quite interesting because there's all this debate about, did she know about voodoo? Was she just telling the kids ghost stories and freaking them out? We don't know. And she confesses and she basically names two other women being Sarah Good and Sarah Osborne. This is, it gets better. So Salem, love this. Salem, apparently the name was chosen as an anglicization of shalom, meaning peace in Hebrew. The irony, it just punches you in the face. So the two women who are accused alongside with Tituba, Sarah Good and Sarah Osborne. Sarah Good was a destitute woman, a beggar. And we think she was accused because she basically thought the Puritan ideals were nonsense and would say so. Sarah Osborne, an older woman, elderly woman, who didn't attend church regularly and was accused of serving her own self-interests. How dare she? Shocking. And also that they didn't like her because she tried to control her son's money. Oh, awful. So they were all hauled off and tried for witchcraft. This is the thing, the trials. I'm not going to get into the trials because you could be here for days. But basically what seems to have happened over the course of this 6 months initially onto a year is that you could be accused for witchcraft for almost any reason. Normally because someone didn't like you or because you... One woman was accused of witchcraft because she quarrelled with her husband. Turns out the quarrelling with her husband was that he used to beat her and she wasn't quiet about it. Anyway, so anyone could be accused for almost any reason. Basically, she didn't like... And the only way that you could get out of this was by confessing, because the people at this time claimed that basically if you confessed, then God would deal with you. If you didn't confess, they would be compelled to execute you. A lose-lose situation. Obviously, the problem is if you have really strong religious beliefs, you're not going to confess, because then you're condemning yourself to punishment in the afterlife because you've lied. So you're in a, you know, rock and a hard place. We have 200 plus people accused, 30 people convicted, 19 people were executed by hanging. One poor guy, his wife was accused. She got hanged. He was accused basically because he was married to her. She was hanged because she refused to say she was a witch because she wasn't. He wasn't hanged. He was squashed to death by big rocks. I know. Because he wouldn't allow himself to be put on trial for witchcraft because he wasn't a witch. So what they did, he was 81 years old. And apparently every time they said, are you going to go on trial now? He just went, put another stone on. It was so bonkers. One woman who was found guilty of witchcraft and executed. Most of the time they were executed for things like I say, not confessing. They then arrested her daughter, who was 4 years old. And they said that she also was a witch because her answers didn't make sense. She's 4 years old.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Her story is horrific. We're not going to get into that. Not a lot of the people that were convicted and put on trial were people that were basically were publicly sceptical about the trials. So anyone who said anyway publicly, this is nonsense, those girls are just talking rubbish, would go, oh, you're a witch. Oh.
So it was a complete option to kind of, or lever to suppress women or anyone who they didn't like, right?
It was a combination. Some of it was to do with family feuding. There was all sorts of things going on, politics, all sorts of stuff going on. Again, I could go into this in great detail. I won't get into it. But yeah, it wasn't just about persecuting women. It was about basically putting the boot in on a community that you wanted to kind of get to shut up. And it was also mass hysteria. They thought it was mass hysteria. So effectively, anyone who publicly expressed skepticism about the trials got accused of witchcraft. If you were accused of witchcraft and you refused to confess, you were hanged as a witch. Brilliant. Lose-lose situation. Tituba, interestingly enough, survived. She came out of it. Because she confessed, she just got put in jail. The other thing is, in these situations, I didn't know this at the time, if you got put in jail, you had to pay. You had to pay. So you have these things called jail fees. You pay for your board and lodgings in jail. So if you can't pay to get out of jail, this still happens. I didn't realise this till the other week. This still happens now. If you're in prison and you work, they take a proportion of your money to pay for your board. Anyway, they even executed two dogs for suspicious behaviour. This stopped, and you'll be surprised by this, shockingly enough, the governor of Massachusetts at the time, where Salem was, a man called William Phipps. In 1692, there had been a court that had been established to this. And one of the things they allowed in evidence was what they referred to as spectral evidence. So you could give evidence saying, I had a dream about this or I had a vision. In October 1692, he shut this court down and they said, you can't use spectral evidence anymore. You want to guess why he did that and started a new court? Because his wife was accused. So 1693, they basically pardoned everyone who had been imprisoned, May 1693, on witchcraft charges. And it turned out over the next few years, all of the people that had been the main instigators of this, the girls, of this, all basically said, I don't know what I was thinking, what was going on. Tituba famously recanted her confession in prison and pretty much said, I only said it so you wouldn't hang me. She disappears, presumably to live a life old age. In 1702, the whole thing was declared as completely unlawful. And in 1711, £600 of restitution was paid to the families, but there was no formal institution apology until 1957. But
wow, 1957.
I know.
Gosh.
It's absolutely nuts. So let's end on a cheery, cheery note, because I think the whole point of that, again, sounds depressing, is the fact that up yours, I'm going to do what I do, and I'm not going to say something just because you want me to. Today, March the 1st, it's also Keisha's birthday. So we're going to play out with her song, Let 'Em Talk, which is what they did in Salem. Have a great day.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.